Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is the Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
One, two, three, four.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it.
Hey, this is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. Joining me in a location far, far away, well, actually it's Sydney, is Jason Murray. Now, you may remember him from such shows as Technogaze 1.0. More recently, he can be found writing for Ozdroid, and occasionally you'll hear him on the Tech Geek Weekly podcast. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It's been a long time, but I'm back in the Technogaze seat, and it's good to be here.
I'm glad you could join us today for our second show for Technogaze 2.0. Now, if you at home want to get in touch with us at any time throughout today's show, you can via Twitter. We have the Technogaze Twitter handle. That's TechnoGaze. Or you can email us technogaze@joy.org.au. Now, without hanging around a bit any longer, we'll start looking at this this week's top stories. Jason, now you've got one or a couple of Facebook stories, yeah?
Yeah, we're going to start off today with a couple of Facebook stories. Tuesday US time, but it all happened on Wednesday for us. Facebook hosted a press conference at its Menlo Park headquarters to announce some new technology called Graph Search. If you're familiar with Facebook, you'd know, and you may not know, that Facebook models all of the information that it collects from you and it makes available to you in what they call a graph. It's not a traditional bar graph with lines and bars, things like that, but it's actually more like a tree of information that links up to each other. And historically, it's been very difficult to search, such that Facebook hasn't actually provided any search for this information. Indeed, if you even go to Facebook and search, then the only things that actually come up as your search results are your friends or, you can search for friends or pages, but you can't search for, you can't search for things like who's visited Los Angeles or things like that. And that's what Facebook is aiming to bring in with the graph search. They're using natural language to mine information that's been shared with you or information that's available to the public. So you could actually go to Facebook and say, hey, which of my friends has visited Los Angeles? And you could actually word the query exactly that way, and Facebook would be able to figure it out, and they'd show you a list of friends that went to Los Angeles. You can then extend that, say, which clubs have my friends been to in Los Angeles? Or, what is the best picture of my friend? And Facebook will go through and it'll tally up like information, it'll look at check-in information, and it all happens just in the blink of an eye. It's all done really, really fast. So analysts say that the graph search will fill in the dots between the person, the brand, and the preference, and it will unlock the potential for brands to provide people with relevant offers for things that they actually want. Now, that's actually an offer that's it's a feature that's often been touted as, you know, something that Facebook really wants to do. They want to start offering things that people want rather than just, you know, blanket carpet bombing people with ads.
Mm.
So, you know, it's possible that they'll use Graph Search to get there. At the moment, it's a pretty limited early release, but there will be a widespread rollout coming pretty soon. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I don't use Facebook, but from a technology perspective, especially the natural language search seems it's the stuff of the future to me. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I saw the article earlier in the week, and I was actually a bit disappointed, I guess. I mean, it's almost as though Facebook have, you know, because you know, all the tech giants out there, there's Google, there's Microsoft, there's Apple, and there's Facebook, or at least Facebook are trying to consider themselves to be one of the giants. You know, they've in the billions of dollars, they're sort of their market value is at and all that sort of thing. And it's almost as if they've decided they need to kick Google in the nuts. They need to say, hey, we can do search too. And they've got all this information available to them, and it's all, you know, semi-structured or more structured, perhaps, than what Google is offering through their search. But it's almost so it's like a bit of a furphy in the end, because I mean, when I'm searching for things on Facebook, I know I'm searching stuff within Facebook. I know that I'm searching for friends, and that's my, you know, my, I don't like a lot of pages or anything like that. My focus on Facebook is more about the friends. So it seems like they're trying to go, you know, make the most of their data, but I suspect that it won't really be that well used.
I think it's actually interesting. It's interesting that you say that, because there's a lot of people out there who actually consider Facebook the internet. and like one of Google's top searches last year was Facebook.com.
Mm.
And yeah, that's you have to remember that not everyone is quite so technically savvy as perhaps you or I. But it is interesting. I like the idea of searching within Facebook. But again, like you said, I'm very aware that I'm within Facebook. And I think when we were talking about this earlier, I said that for a factual search where I'm interested in finding out a fact, I would not go to Facebook and look for that information. Mm. So I don't think that's something that they're really looking to provide with the graph search. But I think they're trying to find a way to tie in your interests with those of your friends and, you know, promote popular things to you and, you know, maybe some things that you might be interested in that you didn't know about.
Yeah. I mean, going off what your line there, I mean, Facebook is really more about opinions. You know, it's more about your social interaction. So you don't, like you say, you know, the whole factual side of things is very, it's not really, doesn't really lean towards being factual on Facebook. It's more about, you know, how people are feeling today or you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not really, it won't replace Google, put it that way. And I think, you know, there's been a bit of kind of a murmur that might be where they're headed. But I mean, going back to the whole, you know, people think that Facebook is the internet. People used to think that AOL was the internet at one point in time. And well, what's AOL today?
AOL today is a content network.
And not a particularly popular one at that. I did notice though when I was looking up this one, it was actually you know, going with the whole Google link. Graph Search is the brainchild of a team that was led by an ex Google engineer named Lars Rasmussen, whom Facebook poached from Google Australia back in 2010. And this guy Rasmussen was the guy who built the first iteration of what became Google Maps, and he was also responsible for the now defunct Google Wave. So, you know,
so that's actually kind of interesting. He's got a really big success and a Google Wave on his resume.
Indeed, yes. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's one of those things. You are listening, of course, to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. We'll be back with more right after this.
Technogaze.
You are listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. Mark and Jason with you today, and we're talking a bit about Facebook. There's been a few developments in Facebook. Of course, we just talked about the new search features that they're offering in limited release at the moment. It's called Graph Search. Another one that came up this week was a thing called Facebook Messenger.
Well, it's actually an addition to Facebook Messenger.
Facebook's
actually... Yeah, see, we don't really use Facebook that much, do we?
Well, actually, I have explicitly turned Messenger off because I think it's the most distracting thing to man.
so you won't get this one then, but Facebook's been experimenting a little bit with charging money for sending a message to strangers, which is kind of interesting. So you could go on Facebook and you could... go onto your friend's profile and you could look at your friend's friends and go, hey, you know, they're kind of hot. I'd like to send them a message. So in December, yeah, look, that's not what I do on Facebook. I just want to be clear about that. I'm all business on Facebook. In December, Facebook started charging $1 to send a message to someone who's not directly connected to you. So essentially a stranger. And that was a bit of an experiment in fighting spam, they said. And this month, the price is $100. Wow, Facebook says they're trying to find the right level to pitch the price in order to deter spammers. So there's got to be something between $1 and $100.
For a dating service, that's pretty damn expensive, if you ask me.
It is, isn't it? however, the interesting thing with that is that what it means is that if you've got $100 to spare, you can actually send a message directly to Mark Zuckerberg.
I'm not sure if I want to date Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, it doesn't have to be used for dating. I thought this might be an interesting question to put out to the listeners. So if you could pay $100 and get a message directly to Mark Zuckerberg, what would that message be? Tweet us at TechnoGaze, and you know, we'll retweet some of our favorites, and you know, yep, we might come up with a few of our own. But
What would you say to the Zuck? Is that what you call him?
The Zuck? I think it's the Zuck. Yeah. Yes. What would your message to the Zuck be? Tell us at TechnoGaze on Twitter.
Yep. At TechnoGaze. That's TechnoGaze. Yeah, so that's probably all the Facebook news we've got for today. But do tweet us if you've got any ideas there.
It's kind of funny, actually. We've just done a Facebook story and we've asked people to contact us on Twitter.
Well, let's
move on.
Now, we're running through some of the top news stories this week, and this one amused me a bit. It was a developer outsourcing his job. I think it was an unnamed firm over in the US has claimed its star developer was outsourcing his work to China. And the firm is said to be a critical infrastructure company over in the US. And it was found that after a security audit was done against the firm's network connections, there was an anomaly in the firm's VPN. Of course, a VPN is the system that's often used for people who work from home to connect into their workplaces and be able to gain access to everything that they would normally be able to do at work. And this particular firm, they offered a work-from-home situation where key people throughout the organisation could happily work from home and they would be, they'd just be able to connect in, and they trusted their employees to do the right thing with that. Of course, what happened when they found these anomalies, they called in their ISP, who just happened to be Verizon, well, one of the major ISPs over in the US, and found the connection was from a Chinese location via what's called a two-factor authentication token. Now, the funny thing about two-factor authentication is that usually that requires a little token or a little, you might see them on people's key rings, digital displays that have a sort of a rotating number that comes up. And in order to gain access to this company's VPN, these Chinese people would have had access to this this token. So it's reported that what the employee did was they sent their little token over to this Chinese firm and said, here, you know, do my job for me. I'll pay you 1/5 of my salary. And I'll just sit and look at pictures of cats on the internet and generally skive about without actually doing any work himself.
That's pretty much the best use of the internet, really, looking at cat GIFs.
That's what it's all about these days, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, look at it this way. He's sacrificed 1/5 of his salary in order to look at cat GIFs.
Well, I suspect he also relaxed. He didn't have to worry about work so much when he was raking in money for doing pretty much nothing.
Do you know what he could have gotten? He could have gotten a job.
There's a certain moral side to this as well. I mean, I was just, you know, as you do, contemplating the moral aspects of this. Yeah, a lot of companies these days, they're talking about outsourcing, and it's not so much the thing these days. Maybe if a couple of years ago, there was a lot of talk about jobs being outsourced to India or being outsourced to sort of countries where the salaries aren't quite as high as what they are here. I wonder if this is almost like an indication. It's almost like the employee sticking it back to the man. Is it someone saying, okay, well, if you guys are threatening to outsource me, then I might outsource my job to them as well?
Yeah, look, why not? I mean, you know, people are constantly living under the threat of having their jobs outsourced. So, yeah, why not get in first?
Hmm.
Yeah. Don't wait for the other shoe to drop. Let's just outsource ourselves. Next week's Technogaze will be hosted from Beijing.
May not be in English.
People will think that they've called Telstra or something like that.
Now you're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9 from Melbourne and Sydney today.
Not Beijing. That's Beijing. Next week.
Now, it's probably time to talk about Microsoft. It's made the news a little bit this week.
Yeah, it has. This one brings back a few fond memories for me. Microsoft is killing but not killing Windows Live, aka MSN Messenger. And I'm sure you have fairly similar memories to me growing up and chatting with lots and lots of people on MSN, be they from school or uni or strange places on the internet.
Yes, and the emoticons. That was the first real messenger app that had a vast array of emoticons, I think.
Yes, yes, it was. And in fact, it had the custom ones that I always turned off because I absolutely hated them. So a bit of background about this story then is Microsoft purchased Skype in May 2011. Skype is alternately great and wonderful, or terrible and the worst thing ever. At the moment we're chatting over Skype, and it's so far holding together. We'll give it a thumbs up. So Microsoft purchased Skype in sort of mid 2011, and they've been slowly trying to integrate Skype and Messenger for the last few months. And finally, they've announced that on March 15, the service will be shutting down, and that customers should use Skype instead. They can actually migrate their account over to Skype and bring over contacts who have also migrated to Skype. But it turns out that the service isn't actually shutting down. And it's kind of foolhardy of Microsoft to say that it is, because it actually powers a bunch of messaging behind Windows Phone and some other Microsoft services. Oh. But Microsoft has clarified that it's not actually shutting down the service, but the desktop messenger client will no longer be able to log in from March 15th.
Right.
So it's kind of the end of an era there.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big, one of the major IM clients of, you're just doing a bit of a heart motion there. Yeah.
Aww.
If only this was TV. it was, you know, the messenger app for quite a number of years. I mean, it's funny thinking back these that long, but.
Yeah. How many times did you meet someone out and about and go, hey, what's your MSN name?
Yes. Yeah, now it's just, you know, can I stalk you on Facebook?
Yeah, now I need your Twitter ID.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's stick with Microsoft for a little bit. So Microsoft's brought out the Surface in the last couple of months. The Surface is currently an ARM CPU-based tablet, which they're pitching as their iPad competitor. It's running Windows 8. At the moment, it seems to have only sold 1 million units in the last quarter, which is it's a little bit on the low side, considering that it's a major hardware launch from Microsoft. We're talking about the Surface RT at the moment, as they've called it. It's running a special ARM version of Windows called Windows RT. A million sales is nothing to be sneezed at, but it's also far from a runaway success, don't you think?
I guess it's not really the iPad killer that perhaps some people wanted it to be, but it's, you know, yeah, like you say, it's nothing to be sneezed at. It's gaining some momentum, perhaps.
Yeah, I think Microsoft sort of tried to get in front of this when they were bringing the Surface to market. They said, "Oh no, we're not expecting to sell that many. You know, it's not going to do that much." I'm surprised it hasn't. Mm. I mean, look, there's been poor PC sales in general for the last quarter. As often happens, manufacturers are starting to point fingers, and they're blaming Windows Pro. They're blaming Windows 8. You know, I'm not really a Windows 8 fan, so I can't attend to agree. I mean, the other thing is that there's this specter of the Surface Pro that's coming out later this month, and the Surface Pro is in many ways what you really want a Surface to be. It's running an Intel CPU, it runs full Windows, and you can install any apps that you want, which you notably can't do on the Surface RT. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens once the Surface Pro hits. Mm. But the Surface Pro is also going up against every other laptop from every other manufacturer. So, yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
Absolutely. Yep. Speaking of disappointing things, though, there's been a bit of talk on the Research in Motion side of things. Of course, they're the people who made BlackBerries, or sorry, I shouldn't use that in the past tense, should I? Well. So we will talk about that. We will just take a quick break though, come back to Research in Motion right after this. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. This is TechnoGaze. Mark and Jason with you today. We're doing some news spotting this week, and Research in Motion, a name that almost have forgotten, but not quite. They of course are the makers of the very infamous BlackBerry phone, been, you know, taken off the perch of the leading smartphone by, of course, iPhone back in the day. But
actually, they've been taken off the perch by everything.
Yes, but there was an announcement, a leak that came out about the BlackBerry, wasn't there, Jason?
Yes, so, well, RIM is relaunching its BlackBerry brand this month with BlackBerry 10. Mm. They actually have skipped version 7 and 8, so we're not entirely sure why it's 10, but why not? and the actual device has been shrouded in mystery for quite some time. They gave out some fairly average devices at one of their BlackBerry dev conferences a few months ago, just so people could get an idea of what the operating system would feel like on actual hardware. But this week we had a leak that has apparently come from a sales training manual, and they're bringing out two phones, the BlackBerry Z10 apparently will have a 4.2 inch 1280 by 768 HD display, which is actually a pretty good display for that size screen. It'll have 2 gigabytes of RAM, which is pretty much par for the course with most Android phones these days, and 16 gigabytes of internal storage. One of the disappointing aspects for me is that it's got an 1800 milliamp hour battery, and I find that pretty disappointing. I have a Nexus 4 at the moment. It's got a 2100 milliamp hour battery, and I have to plug it in to charge about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon if I don't want my phone to die when I go out. So it'll be interesting to see how the BlackBerry and the new BlackBerry OS handles this. So additionally, there's been a bit of speculation over some of the other specs, and rumor is that there'll be a front-facing 2-megapixel camera and a rear-facing 8-megapixel camera. So pretty average specs.
The average specs for me was the 16 gig of internal storage. I mean, is that enough to keep your media that you want to store on your phone and that sort of thing? Like,
well, that's a question I had to ask myself with the Nexus 4 as well. And ultimately, I'm not happy about it with the Nexus 4, but I'm dealing with it. I'm not sure if BlackBerries tend to use external storage cards as well.
Yeah. Now, on the Research in Motion side of things, they've also talked about their apps that are available for this new release.
Yeah, so they've said that they have 15,000 apps, and that apparently that's enough for a successful launch.
15,000.
Yeah. I'm not sure how many of those might be fart apps. But I tend to regard everything that RIM says about apps with a very healthy distrust, because they've been on what is essentially a sinking ship of a platform for years now. And there was this very famous comment that they made a couple of years ago about how BlackBerry platforms have these things called super apps. And when they were asked by members of the press, you know, so what's a super app? They're like, oh, you'll know it when you see it. It's just this very vague term.
It's almost like they seem to have this sort of weird view of what the ecosystem that they're trying to create is, isn't it? It's almost like they're trying to impose an ecosystem on everyone instead of just, you know, letting it naturally form, like I guess the Android community and the iOS community did. They tried to create this tier level, in fact, of apps, which doesn't seem to ring true with the way that mobile app development.
I mean, RIM has done some strange things with their app development community. Like they set the minimum price of an app as a few dollars. And, you know, we know how well 99-cent apps do. And also there was this strange thing a few months ago that came up that said, if you port your app to BlackBerry, then, you know, we will make sure that you make money. And if you don't make money, we'll pay you. They're trying to encourage developers over any way they can. And, you know, as much as I might like to put the boot into them, you know, more power to them. If they can encourage developers over, then great.
Hmm. Now, moving on from Research in Motion and onto something slightly different, but it's right up my alley because it has a bit of politics involved in this one. It's a bit of technology, a bit of sci-fi. And I think both of us, Jason and I, you and I think this is probably our favourite news item of the week.
Of course, it involves Star Wars.
Favourite topic, and it also involves the White House. There was a petition to build a Death Star that was signed. Now, this is an official White House thing where you can go online, you can create a petition, and what happened with the petition?
I find it a pretty interesting experiment in digital democracy, really. Somewhere along the way, this website attracted a petition to construct a Death Star, which, if you're not familiar with Star Wars, in which case, shame on you, the famous moon-sized planet destroyer from Star Wars that was rather infamously destroyed by Luke Skywalker in his X-Wing fighter. And this petition actually gained enough attention, which is to say over 30,000 signatures, that it actually warranted an official response from the White House according to the rules of the website. And this made more headlines this week because the official response is actually hilarious. Not only is it hilarious, it's also quite poignant in the way that it discussed the US space program and mankind's achievements in interplanetary exploration. So ultimately, the main reason the Obama administration has refused to build a Death Star is that it would have a cost of $850 quadrillion. Now, if you're not familiar with a quadrillion, and why not, that's 16 zeros after the 850.
That's also, what, is it 1,000 times a trillion? Like, a quadrillion is 1,000 times a trillion, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, so, I mean, sure, they could just mint the coin 1,000 times over, and, you know, they'd be able to pay for it. But as the White House commented, we're working hard to reduce the deficit, not expand it. They also had another couple of choice quotes. The administration does not support blowing up planets. And finally, they suggested that spending countless taxpayer dollars on a Death Star would be irresponsible when it has a fundamental flaw that can be exploited by a one-man starship.
Yes, it's good to see that politicians do have a sense of humour every now and then.
It did. Like I said, this is my favourite story of the week. I think the White House actually got a lot of nerd points this week. But so the story didn't actually end there either, because the Galactic Empire's official response came via the StarWars.com website, entitled "Planet Earth Abandons Death Star Project in Face of Superior Intergalactic Power," which included the choice quote, "Such destructive power can only be wielded to protect and defend by a so enlightened an leader as Emperor Palpatine." So disappointingly, the required signature count for the White House's petition website has since been raised to 100,000.
Well, this is the same website, and we referred to it just now as they've proposed an idea that as a petition raised to mint a $1 trillion coin, just so that they could deposit that into the treasury. And there was some semi-serious discussion about that being an option for them to draw down their current financial woes over there.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a plan that Wall Street could come up with and make work.
Yes, well, I'm not financially, I'm not particularly qualified in the financial space, so I'll make no further comment in fear of offending a whole bunch of people.
Fair enough. Look, I think we should move on, and maybe we can squeeze in a quick story about Nintendo before we head off to the next break.
Yes, why not? Nintendo, so, they're looking at the console. Of course, they've got a Wii U that's recently out.
The Wii U has been out on Australian shores, I think it's been on our store shelves for a couple of months now.
Yep, and they're also doing some organisational changes within the company itself, right?
Yeah, they're trying to unify their console and their handheld divisions, and this has been pitched to the press as a major organisational shift. It's been happening a lot in Japanese corporations, and it sounds very similar at the moment to Kaz Hirai's One Sony approach, which Sony's actually been working on this for about a year now. They're trying to get rid of all of the silos between different divisions. A lot of Japanese companies are really feeling the economic pinch. They're streamlining to save money and compete. Nintendo hasn't done too badly in recent years. The Wii actually did really well for them financially, but as that console reached the end of its life cycle, they've started to lose money because they're not making sales anymore. So they haven't had a great couple of years, but I actually think Nintendo could probably pull this off a little bit easier than Sony, because Nintendo doesn't have movie studios, they don't have music labels and TVs and all sorts of other consumer electronics divisions to pull together. They've just got two very simple divisions. There's the home consoles and there's the portable stuff. So, yeah, they may be able to pull this off. We'll see. I mean, the Wii U hasn't actually had the greatest of starts anyway. The original Wii outsold it in December, which is not great when you've just launched the next generation of consoles. But they've actually, the difference is that they've actually made more money off less hardware sales, which can probably be attributed to the unit's higher price.
Mm. Yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see how the Wii U goes in the space. I mean, it at least brings their console up to HD TV standards. You've got decent quality graphics coming out of a Wii U now than what you did on the old Wii.
Yeah, that's right. It's taken them a long time to get there. They had to jump a generation in order to do it, but they've finally got a console that can output high def graphics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's watch this space type thing. I mean, we did talk about it a bit last week as well on TechnoGaze, so definitely one to look out for. Now let's move on to a wider gaming discussion. One of my favourite games of all time is making a bit of a comeback, and I'm really excited about it. I'm of course talking about SimCity. So, still to come on TechnoGaze, we'll take you through some of the recent stuff in the gaming industry, and that includes SimCity and a couple other games that Raider mentioned. You are listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. TechnoGaze! You're on Joy 94.9 and we are Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of technology. Now, there's been a few recent developments that have taken our fancy in the world of gaming, not least of which is the launch late last year of the latest console from Nintendo, the Wii U, which we talked a little bit about just now. On the gaming front, you and I, Jason, we've both taken a bit of a fancy to a game each. My game, of course, is SimCity. Now, SimCity has been around for quite some time. I remember as a kid, I used to play it to the wee hours of the morning. And of course, there's a new version coming out in 2013 of SimCity, and it seems to be quite a big shift in their gameplay development. Now they're doing a bit of a social media marketing push for this next version. And as far as social media campaigns go, it's been a bit ordinary. But for SimCity fanatics, every new screenshot they release, every video of the gameplay is, of course, welcome.
I completely agree. Every time I see a story about the new SimCity, I'm glued to it, and I just sit there and I watch the video over and over. They've done some really good walkthroughs. It looks amazing.
Mm. They've definitely gone with the whole what's that it's a photography term that they use. It's something shift.
So it seems at least from the pre-release shots that they're using some kind of a tilt shift mechanism, and it makes everything look a lot more sort of toy-like.
Mm.
It makes everything look like a miniature toy set. And the going with the building designs, I mean, it really looks fantastic. It gives the impression that you're really observing this city, and it's a sort of like a plaything off in the distance.
Mm. And one of the things about the campaign that I've seen so far is they've talked a lot about this new simulation engine that they've developed for this version of the game. It's a thing called Glassbox. And now what Glassbox does, it simulates everything at a very low level. So the game tracks even as low as individual people moving around your city. So you might have a person who moves into their home, and they have to find work in the industrial areas of your city. The effluent that they create is output and tracked along with also the water that comes into your town as well.
Yeah, I find the idea that they're actually simulating people in the city now is really interesting, considering back when they did things like SimCity 2000 and SimCity 3000, the developers at the time said, "Oh, hey, look, we don't have enough resources in the computer to track individual people. Even if you were to boil it down and say, each person would take up, maybe 1 or 3K of memory and to simulate them. If you were to multiply that out to a city, then, it multiplies exponentially and you wouldn't have enough RAM in your computer."
Mm.
Here we are now, years later, and we have a simulation engine that is actually simulating individual citizens of your city. It's awesome.
Well, when you think about it, the memory footprint for SimCity 2000, I remember you had to load SimCity 2000 with absolutely nothing else loaded into memory on your
yes.
486. You'd have 4 megabytes of memory, and you'd have to load it into what was essentially called safe mode back then, just to get SimCity 2000 running. So now they've got, 4 gigabytes of memory or even more, So it's it makes sense.
I think the memory requirements are actually going to be pretty high for the game. But, I mean, we've all got PCs that are, pretty powerful. Even my MacBook Air should be capable of running it.
Mm. So another new feature is they've removed the need to build roads. So you might recall in the previous versions, you'd build roads, but you used to have to put pipes under the road to make sure that the water got transported. And so it was this arduous task of when you wanted to lay out your city, you had to put roads up on top and then build the pipes underneath and then put the power through as well. What they've actually done for this time around is as soon as you build a road, you've suddenly got all the utilities built into that. So there's no sort of triple handling of your... your city layout, which I think is probably a good thing. They're trying to make it more streamlined and try to get to the actual part of, you know, building your city as opposed to just putting all the infrastructure in.
Yeah, it's more realistic too, because in old versions of SimCity you couldn't stack things vertically, so you couldn't put a pipe and then put a road over it, whereas that's what we actually do when we build a city. We have pipes that go under our roads and, you know, under various footpaths and things. So, you know, I think it's a little bit more realism there. I'm in favour of it.
Yeah, speaking of water, the glass box engine also simulates your terrain. So where it keeps track of the water table of a given area. So with this version, you can build a water pump. You don't need to be next to a body of water as such. It can extract groundwater if the water table is sufficient enough. And the other interesting thing is you have to dispose, of course, of effluent, through the pipe system that runs underneath your city. And if you happen to put your plant that deals with effluent right near your water table that you're extracting water from, it mixes the two together, and it knows that that is actually not so healthy water.
Yeah. I find it really interesting. They're not just simulating the city, but they're also simulating the landscape around it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's... I don't think Will Wright is involved with any of the Sim Anything games anymore. I mean, this is basically Electronic Arts going off and doing it, and it's actually really interesting to see what a fresh take the new guys are coming in and taking to SimCity. There's all of these things that we didn't really consider or didn't think was possible before, and they've put it all together, and it looks like a lot of fun, and it looks very sort of effortless to play. The demo videos, which I really encourage you all to go and have a look at the demo videos, it's going to be great.
They've introduced a social side to the game as well, where your city is actually situated next to other people's cities, and they're all connected online. So the Glassbox engine allows your city to interact with your neighbours in a far more direct way than previous versions. So, for example, you can build a city that is largely industrial yourself, but it might contain very little residential zoning, but as long as you've got transportation to and from your neighbouring cities, the citizens from those cities can find work in your city and move out and in into your city. Another example was you can build a gaming city. You can build casinos in your city, and that's of course a tourist attraction. So you get people literally coming in on trains, and you see the little there's a demo online with it. All the people get off the train and walk right from the train station to the next door casino, and they all sort of empty out their pockets.
You put the casino right next to the train station, and of course the city's coffers get filled, and he can do other things and build lots of stuff.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting as well that you get the option, I guess, of you know, building the type of city that you want to, and really experimenting with the whole, you know, concept of city planning that I guess, you know, it almost to a whole new level from what you did before. And it's got the air of it being a lot more realistic now than perhaps previous versions. There was always a concept back in SimCity 2000 or 3000 or the previous versions where you're almost playing the game. You're not really doing it, you know, for real. You can control the variables, and it's all about that. This time there's a bit more of a realism feel to it. So it'll be interesting to see how that really plays out.
Yeah, I would imagine that one of the natural disasters in this version of SimCity will be a global financial crisis. So did you sign up for the beta?
I did. I've requested to be on the beta team, but alas, they haven't picked me yet. Oh. So if anyone from EA is listening, feel free to send me an invite. That'd be marvellous, I could say. I may well go AWOL when it actually is finally released. So if there's no techno gaze for a couple of weeks, then I may well be playing SimCity.
Actually, that's okay, because by that time we should have the Beijing techno gaze team up and running.
Indeed. Now, yes, moving on from SimCity, now there's a game that you've been that's taken your fancy, Jason.
Yeah, I've been playing a game. As you said, I'm a bit of an Android guy, so yeah, that should be pretty obvious. So I've been playing an Android game, surprise, surprise, called Ingress. So Ingress is a game that's been developed by a division within Google themselves called Niantic Labs, and it features a conspiracy and a sci-fi plot that's starting to appeal to a growing number of players around the world. So the plot of the game is that Earth is being invaded from a parallel dimension by these beings called Shapers. They influence creative minds, and this influence may or may not be responsible for some of humanity's greatest work. Shapers enter our world through portals that are located at various landmarks and points of interest across the planet. So it's a worldwide game. Humanity is now split into two factions. There is the Enlightened, who believe that the Shapers are good for humanity and will help us evolve, and there's the Resistance, who believe that the Shapers need to be stopped at all costs. So players have to go out to these portals, and they have to take control of them for their faction. You need to actually go to the portal, and you need to work with players who are also on your faction, and it becomes a social game the longer you play it. There are lots of vibrant communities that have popped up on Google Plus and some wikis and some other websites. These guys are mobilizing and organizing players to go and attack and defend portals. So Ingress is unique. It doesn't encourage you to get off the couch. It actually encourages you to get out of the house. You actually have to go to these portals in order to take them over or defend them.
So it sounds like it's a big global game of capture the flag, perhaps.
It is, and once you start, it's pretty difficult to stop. At the moment, I don't want to stop. I'm getting out and about, and I'm exploring Sydney, more than I ever have before. So yeah, there's a couple of downsides. It's a big battery drain because it needs your screen and your GPS and probably your Wi-Fi also on at the same time. So my USB battery pack is getting a heck of a workout.
Now you mentioned it's an Android game. Can I get Ingress on my iOS device?
Not yet, but I don't think it's the kind of thing that'll stay Android exclusive for too long. I think it's mainly because they're still developing the game. It's in a closed beta at the moment, and that means things can get reset and the rules can change pretty suddenly. But you can sign up for an invite at ingress.com, and eventually they'll invite you to play, or someone might give you a code if you're lucky.
Excellent. Now, we're just about out of time, but we will be back right after this.
Technogaze.
You are listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. Before we sign off today, we thought we'd quickly talk about Twitter. With over 500 million users, there's a lot of serious discussion about news and politics, but there's also a good deal of light-hearted humour going on too. Now, Jason, you've got a couple of favourite Twitter handles that you follow.
Yeah, so one of my favourite Twitter topics is talking about TV shows. That's probably because I watch a lot of TV. My favourite things in terms of TV shows are some accounts that propose new seasons of long cancelled shows. And some of them go so far as to regularly post possible plot ideas. Some of them are serious, most of them are not. So in particular, I quite like the TNG Season 8 Twitter account, which contains plot lines for a new season of Star Trek The Next Generation. This includes a few gems, like Troi's lover transforms her into a painting, and Worf is hiding his collection of dishonorable Ponfar magazines.
Now, along similar lines, there's also a relatively recent account suggesting plot lines for a modern-day version of Seinfeld called Seinfeld Today.
Yeah, they're quite funny because they bring in concepts like Kramer getting involved with a flash mob. I think in one of the things, Elaine ended up dating Justin Bieber or something. So yeah. So look, we have
a bit of a fondness for Doctor Who as well, right?
Yeah, we do. I have a great fondness for Doctor Who. If you're also fond of Doctor Who, you might be interested to know there's a large number of Daleks on Twitter.
They all take on different personalities, don't they? There's one. What is it? The Republican Dalek.
Yeah, the Republican Dalek appears to have been exposed to U.S. politics for a little bit too long. there's also the unemployed Dalek, which has been around since about season 2 of Doctor Who, where they killed off a lot of Daleks, so this Dalek is now unemployed. And there's also a verbose Dalek that just seems to just keep talking.
he just doesn't stop. Speaking of talking and things that shouldn't be talking, there's you can also follow Joy's in-studio clock at Joy949clock and get the time with some added sass.
Yeah.
I'm sure some around the studio here will appreciate me mentioning that. Now, that's all we have time today for TechnoGaze. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you have anything you'd like to say, feel free to tweet us at TechnoGaze. We're not quite so funny, but we do like to keep in touch with you at home. So do follow us on TechnoGaze. That's TechnoGaze. And we'd love to hear from you. Now, thank you, Jason, for joining me today.
It's a pleasure as always.
And coming up next is, of course, a Joy News Bulletin. And then we'll be on to Cravings with Pete Dillon. Have an excellent afternoon, everyone, and catch you next week.
TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.